first atomic explosion took place 7 decades ago, but there's still fallout. The National Cancer Institute has embarked on a new study to examine cancer risks from that early detonation. Researchers want to know how many past and present cancer cases in New Mexico might have been induced by that explosion called Trinity. Here to tell us more is Dr. Stephen Simon, head of the dosimetry unit of the radiation epidemiology branch at the National Cancer Institute. Dr. Simon, good morning.
Good morning to you, Tom.
All right, so tell us about what happened nearly 70 years ago. It was 1945, July 16th. This is the explosion that we're talking about?
Yes, it is. Tom, in 1945, the U.S. government tested the very first atomic bomb in July of that year. The name of that test was the code name was Trinity. This test was a plutonium fuel device that was designed and constructed at Los Alamos. And this was actually the culmination of the Manhattan Project.
All right, so that bomb took place. It was a mile-wide crater. What can be learned now, 70 years later? Is there still radiation extant from it?
Well, there is a radiation signature all over the world, Tom, from nuclear testing. So that part is not necessarily unique to Trinity. What we would like to know from Trinity is what was the health risk to the local population in New Mexico?
Now, there were a lot of people watching the explosion, but you're more concerned about people that were living maybe not even within sight of the test site, but that might have been affected by what fell out from it after the mushroom cloud went to 4 or 5 miles in the air.
Well, you're right. We're not studying the scientists or the professionals or the people that worked on the weapon. We're studying the public in New Mexico. The National Cancer Institute was actually asked to do that a few years ago by the Senator Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico. And this is our business, to study health risks and the causes of cancer to populations. So that's why we're doing that.
All right, so you had a team that recently visited the state. What did they do? What were they looking for?
Tom, to make the kind of assessment that I'm talking about, that is to assess the health risk to the population, we first need to understand to what degree the population was exposed to radiation. That's a little complicated for radioactive fallout. You have to understand how the people lived, what kind of houses they lived in, how much time they spent outdoors, what their diet was, the kinds of food they ate. You have to understand their entire lifestyle. So at this point in time, we're not studying the radiation directly. We're studying the lifestyles of the people. And there is much for us to learn in New Mexico, particularly about the Native American population and the Hispanic population. We need to know how they lived, what they ate and drank, and where that food and water came from at the time of the test.
Now, is there anyone alive that might have been directly affected at that time?
Well, we asked the same question. It's quite difficult to get precise census statistics today of people that live in remote areas in Mexico, but in fact, there are people alive. So there's quite a number of people that are over 80 years old still today.
And what do we know about the cancer rates among that population or possibly their offspring?
Well, the cancer rates we are not studying yet, but we do have information about that. Each state has a tumor registry, and in fact, New Mexico has their own tumor registry at the University of New Mexico Cancer Center. So they have information on cancer rates that have been accumulated for many decades. Now, most registries were not in operation in 1945. Many became operational in the 1950s and 1960s. So we have some information, but it's a little premature for me to comment on cancer rates. Right now, we're studying the diet and the way people were exposed.
And of course, I think there's probably a gap between what's known about Native Americans and Hispanic populations versus what we knew about everybody else in the same proximity.
Well, sure, that's very right. There's not extensive publication for Native Americans and Hispanics as there is for Caucasians and other populations. So that's why we're actually out there trying to learn from the elders of these groups about how they lived.
We're speaking with Dr. Stephen Simon. He's head of the dosimetry unit of the radiation epidemiology branch at the National Cancer Institute. And are there locals in the area that maybe are contending that there is a higher rate incidence of cancer over the years that they might have attributed to those. It was actually more than one test that went on, correct?
No, in New Mexico, there was actually only one test, Tom. So this is something that some people have confused. The United States tested many nuclear devices, but the rest were tested in Nevada and then in the Pacific. So only one test took place in New Mexico. But to answer your question, Tom, of course, there's a number of public interest, grassroots groups, activist groups in New Mexico that are quite concerned about the health risks. And we are trying to learn from these people and have them work with us because they have the experience on the ground. They know how people live. So we are working with these people and learning from them.
And what do we know about where the fallout produces greater radiation? In other words, the explosion takes place, then material settles down from the sky. Does it get into the water? Does it get into feedstock for cattle? I mean, what do we know about the chain of, spread of radiation from the original radioactive materials?
Right. Well, first we have to know where did the radioactive cloud go. I'll tell you, if I didn't know that, it would be nearly impossible for me to do this work. So there is documents. There are public documents today that show and the magnitude and the direction of the radioactive cloud. From Trinity, it went to the northeast in a very narrow kind of path, basically just followed the wind direction. After that, the fallout moves through the atmosphere and gradually deposits on the ground. It's just particles. It's very, very fine, small particles that they're really invisible to the eye. It falls out and more or less deposits on everything, whether it's plants, whether it's gardens, whether it's water troughs, whether it's animals, all of those things receive a very fine dusting from the fallout cloud.
And is there, what was the half-life of that material?
Well, fallout from a nuclear weapon is a complex mixture of more than 200 radioisotopes. Many are short-lived, Tom. That is, they only last a few seconds, a few minutes. Others last hours. Some last days, weeks, years, and even many decades. Today, there is only a very small residual amount left. Primarily of cesium-137, which has a half-life of 30 years. All the other short-lived isotopes have decayed.
Okay, so what we're looking for then is what might have happened a long time ago, but there's no current danger left from that particular explosion.
That's correct, Tom. That's correct.
All right, so what will you do next? I mean, what is the state of your data gathering, and what do you need to do still?
Well, we just spent 2 weeks in New Mexico. We had a wonderful trip and met many interesting people, very cooperative people that told us their stories and gave us information about how they lived. That was a phase one of our study. Right now, we're going to look at that information, digest it, and plan a more extensive data collection exercise next year. So the first phase is really to learn how to collect the data properly, how to investigate these questions, where the people still are living, and these kinds of issues so that we can plan a more comprehensive data collection.
Have you come across legends or folk tales that people might have passed down just from because they would not have had direct knowledge of what was going on, but they might have seen something extraordinary nevertheless?
I think we hear folk tales sometimes because sometimes we talk to people who didn't observe the test directly, but yet maybe they believe they did, or they've seen images or pictures or photographs or movies. We all tend to do this. So I don't have any extraordinary tales to tell you, but there are many interesting stories about those from those people who actually did see the light from the test over the horizon. Some people may have even seen the cloud because they were towns close enough where that could have happened.
So they would have seen something that had never been seen before by anybody.
Right. We made interviews in the Alamogordo and Tularosa area, and there were individuals who actually did see the explosion. It took place at 5:30 in the morning, before most people were awake. But those few people who were up and around in the early hours of the morning would have seen the light from the explosion.
And once you get the research done next year, and you said you're going to do more extensive and deeper interviews, what becomes of that body of knowledge? What is it you hope to glean eventually from it in the long run?
Well, first of all, it's going to take us a bit of work to process that information, to compile it and put it into a dose model. Dose means how much radiation dose did people receive? So we're trying to understand what people received in all ethnic groups and in all age groups in New Mexico. We'll use that to predict or project the number of cancers that might have occurred from this test. That in itself is useful because people want to understand the origins of disease, and particularly the origins of cancer. Cancer is complex and occurs for many reasons, but we would at least like to know that component that came from radiation.
All right, Dr. Stephen Simon is head of the dosimetry unit of the radiation epidemiology branch at the National Cancer Institute. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much.